Thank you so much for listening to Urbanistica podcast. I am Mustafa Sharif, an urban planner, and you're more than welcome to join my big journey of exploring the making of smarter and more livable cities. Please don't forget to follow Urbanistica on the different social media platforms, and also let's connect on LinkedIn. Big thanks to Urbanistica podcast partner, AFRI. AFRI is an international engineering and design company providing sustainable solutions in the fields of energy, industry, and infrastructure. Are you ready for a new episode? Let's go for it. So hello and welcome to Urbanistica podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. It's my pleasure to be here.
How are you?
I'm good. I'm having a great time here. We're at in Torino. And yeah, it's great.
Is it your first time visiting the city?
This is my first time here. Yeah.
How do you experience it?
You know, it's great because I think as an American, if you think of like top two or three places you're going to come in Italy, it's usually Rome, it's usually Florence, it's usually Venice. Yeah. So to get the opportunity to come to the city and see you know, a place like Turin, which is great and has its challenges, just like an American city, many American cities, like any city.
Yeah.
And to meet actual local people who are working to make it better.
Yeah.
That makes the trip that much better.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
I'm really enjoying it so far.
Yes. And you are here, and as I told you before we start, it's good to have different perspective. Like everyone here is like a placemaker, architect, planner, and you're coming with a new perspective.
Yeah, I'm an activist. Yeah. I obviously am a podcaster.
Yeah.
And I have a media background, so I don't have a traditional urban planning or architecture background that I bring to bear on the subject.
Yeah. Do you find it difficult to have a conversation or to understand like this field?
No, I find it much easier, in fact.
Easier.
And
okay.
So it's kind of funny. So my background is in television production, and
yes.
I, for a long time, worked on a lot of shows about science. I worked on Nova,
yeah.
which is a PBS show in the States, all about science. And I was an English major in college. Literature and writing.
Yeah.
I'm terrible at science. So whenever I would interview someone for television, I would say to that person, look, it has to make sense to me. You know, if it doesn't make sense to me, how can I make it make sense to the audience?
True.
And so that, you know, urban planning concepts can be very counterintuitive.
Yeah.
You know, how do you take away a lane of traffic and have less traffic, right? How do you add more bicyclists to a street and that makes it safer? Like, these are not intuitive topics for a regular person who is not well-versed or like inside baseball, as we say in America. And so that's a skill I hope I bring to bear on the subject, which is translating these sometimes arcane urban planning concepts, which I'm really fascinated by, and I read a ton on the subject.
Yes.
But the average person, who we hope is the audience for the show, doesn't understand.
Yeah. And why, like in your podcast, why you picked up this specific niche? Usually, like, you know, podcasts about cities, just like mine, we talk about different aspects within the cities. But for you, you started a war.
Yeah. So it always comes down to, why did we name the podcast?
Yeah.
What it is, and why did we take this approach?
Yeah.
So the name. The name usually comes from, this is something happening in every city.
Yeah.
Is that if you try to readjust just slightly a street in favor of transit users or cyclists or just people in general, for pedestrian plazas or whatever, you get accused of waging a war on cars. And this is a thing that is way... It's a charge that is levied at any social movement, right? Like, if women start graduating more from big law schools and get jobs at big law firms, it's a war on men. It's like, no, this is just rebalancing or giving people opportunities who didn't have them before. In the States, you know, it's like, if you say happy holidays instead of Merry Christmas, it's a war on Christmas. It's like, well, have you considered that there might be more than just Christians who celebrate our, you know, diverse society?
Yeah.
So, that's where that name comes from. And so we decided to adopt the name and use it for ourselves.
Yeah.
And it also allowed us to, the name informs the tone, and the tone informed the name.
Of course.
So we bring humor to the subject.
Yeah.
Non-traditional subjects. Like, I did an episode on, why are there no bike lanes in Lego play sets? Which is weird because it's a Danish company. where
exactly, yeah,
right? Or we do a look at all the Super Bowl ads for cars every year, every year. So, you know, we wanted to take less of a policy-minded approach and more of a cultural approach to the subject.
Yeah, and like usually now, how to say? Now a lot of podcasts are coming up, which is great. We have more voices. At the same time, people might say, okay, a podcast, it's just like a platform to talk, but you cannot really sense or see the impact of this conversation. In your show, did you see some kind of impact coming out from it?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's the language that we're offering people to talk about it in a non-policy oriented way. So there's that. We get emails from people all the time saying, you know, I live in a small city and I thought I was weird because I wanted to bike to work and you know, there was no bike lane and I kept going to talk to people about it and they told me to be quiet, but listening to you I found my people. And then a lot, we had a meetup in New York on an open street, and we joked that we didn't need to be there because after a while people stopped talking to us and they were just sort of hatching their own plans and talking to each other. So we have fostered some community where people connect with each other to help build campaigns. We just did an episode, my co-host Sarah Goodyear produced an episode on the bike bus phenomenon that's happening in Barcelona, Portland, everywhere. And I can't say that we inspired everybody to start bike buses, but since that episode has aired, we've heard from more people who said, now I want to do it.
Yeah.
You know, all credit goes to the organizers of the bike bus. But we find ourselves as just like a nexus of all of these different ideas and disseminating them to people. So we do think we've had an impact and, you know, our audience is growing and we're humbled by it.
Amazing. And the, and you, you want to drink?
Oh yeah, I should. Okay. After just talking for way too long. I get to the point where I, you probably get this too.
Yeah.
If you edit these yourselves, like you hate listening to the sound of your own voice after a while. Anyway.
Yes. And you're from a journalism background. What is the strongest platform? Is it like a blog, YouTube, newspaper, podcast? Which one is the strongest?
I mean, in terms of reach, it's probably YouTube because the algorithm serves up you to more people, like not just bikes, which I think is an incredible channel. Mm. Jason is an amazing, he's a great point of view and I love watching his stuff. He has millions of people watching his videos, not only because he creates really great stuff, but because the algorithm then serves up more. And then that has an effect on people. If they're watching his show, his channel, they get served up other stuff. Podcasting doesn't have the algorithmic reach that YouTube does. That being said, like I love podcasting because it's like kind of formatless. We have a format, but we can deviate from it.
Yeah.
And it's very intimate. You know, people are probably listening to us talk and we are literally inside their heads. I like the format of it. You can be very, you can be intimate yourself. We are very revealing about who we are on the podcast and our own journey to activism. And so I like that. I mean, look, what has the biggest reach? The car companies with their billions of dollars, you know, running ads on the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
But I wish we had that kind of reach and we would have, then we would have won the war on cars already. Yeah. So,
Because the thing is that a lot of organization, companies, architects, planners, and so on, they want to put out their ideas. So at the same time, there are a lot of social media platforms, different, like as we talked about now, YouTube, podcasts and newspaper. So what do you suggest them to do?
It depends. Putting out a podcast, two episodes a month, plus a bonus episode every month, putting a YouTube channel together, it's a lot of work.
That's true.
I'm sure, you know, I'm sure this conversation you edit and then, you know, that even just the slightest change can take, you know, a 2 second change can take 5-10 minutes to do. It's a lot of work to put out a podcast and podcasting only succeeds when you do it in a predictable way where the audience can expect, you know, every second Tuesday, something is coming out. And so my advice to people, it kind of sounds like I'm saying my advice is don't, but know what you're getting into, what I would say, and what you want to achieve.
Okay.
You know, why are you doing it? Well, I have an opinion that I'd like to share. Okay. You could maybe share that opinion like in a newspaper editorial or online on someone else's podcast. you have a unique perspective that nobody else is bringing to the subject, yeah, I think that's a great reason to start a podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So not blog or video on YouTube or...
You know, blogging, I used to blog and it's great. Also a lot of work if you're doing it regularly, but nobody really reads blogs anymore because we're all reading like really quick things flying across our social media feeds. Yeah. And even social media is collapsing now where the reach of Twitter slash X slash whatever it is, is not the same as it used to be.
What do you think about TikTok? Like, is it... good to put videos there.
There's such a great young urbanist community on TikTok. Yeah. I love seeing some of their stuff. And they rack up millions of views. And I do think they are changing the conversation quite a lot.
Yeah.
I'm not going to list anybody because I'm going to leave out tons of people. There's just so many good young urbanist TikTokers who are talking about bus lanes and bike lanes and climate change and all the reasons we need to change our cities. And so, I mean, that has the algorithmic reach as well.
Yeah, but do you think it's like TikTok for young, only for young people? I mean, because now we have a lot of listeners, they might be like not only young people. So is TikTok for them or no?
Look, whatever you want to do, whatever platform you want to get on, great, do it. It's a good way to advance your message. But you have to be careful as an advocate because, look, I became an advocate. I started my blog in 2010. I got on Twitter that year and I created sort of a brand, right? I became Brooklyn Spoke. That was my handle.
Yeah.
And we have the War on Cars. That's our handle, right? But after a while, I realized like you can't just be that person shouting into the wind or screaming at elected officials or posting a meme or something like that. A lot of what we're talking about in fixing cities involves physically doing something, whether that's striping a bike lane on a street or showing up to a public meeting because the people who want to maintain a car dominated status quo, some of them are on TikTok, but most of them are at the meetings and they're calling their elected officials saying, don't take my parking.
Okay.
So, you know, to young people listening, and I'm, you know, firmly middle aged, like people in their 20s, people in their 30s, they are doing this. To a large extent. So I don't want to sound like an old man lecturing young people, but I think like everybody needs that reminder of like, we got to get off our phones and we got to get out into real public space with other people and make a pro people, pro living social argument for why our streets need to change. That only happens face to face.
And what makes a podcast successful? Like what are the elements?
Well, I think there's the predictability, like I said, like the audience needs to know another one's going to show up without having to even think about it.
Okay.
I think having a really unique perspective on an interesting subject, of course, and there's tons of those. You know, we are not huge personalities in terms of like, we're not, you know, a Hollywood celebrity or a sports figure or someone with a otherwise large platform. So having a really unique point of view helps if you're not already famous. And I think taking a non-traditional approach to traditional subjects can help. So, you know, we did an episode that I produced about why there are no bike lanes in Lego City, like I mentioned. And that episode wasn't just about why are there no bike lanes in Lego City, like I said, this Danish company, right? It was about more philosophically, like maybe the way that we see things in our toys reflects the way we see things in our streets, and the way we change our streets and the way we change or convince this company to change, they have a lot of similar elements. And so there were lessons people could draw there, not just of like going to the toy store and asking for something new, but really looking at the world in a different way. I always think of 99% Invisible as like one of the best examples of taking a kind of non-traditional approach to everyday subjects and making you look at the world in a different way after you're finished listening to an episode, which I think is the highest mark any podcast can have. Did the person walk away with a new understanding of the world? And so I think that's a big part of it. Like, what are you trying to say? What are you trying to accomplish?
Yeah.
Those are big questions to ask.
So doing a podcast takes a lot of time.
Yeah.
But what is the reward? Like,
I want to ask you, what's the reward for you?
No, for me, the reward, like, it's career wise, money wise, a lot of things. How is it in your case?
Sorry, I can't stop being a podcast host even when I'm the guest, so I apologize. But the reward for me is getting to meet really fascinating people.
Yeah.
I mean, I got invited to come to this conference.
That's beautiful.
You know, all because of this podcast that we built with my co-hosts. And that is a huge reward. I mean, look, we do make money from it. We have Patreon, we have advertisers and things like that. We sell merchandise, all the stuff to keep the lights on. It's starting to grow to a point where it's making enough money, not necessarily to completely drop other jobs and things like that. But, you know, it has to be a labor of love because very few podcasts, unless they start off with a massive platform already, are going to make money. I joke that we're sort of we're like a artisanal Brooklyn business. You know, I call us a mom and pop store, right? Where we're just like constantly waking up and making the donuts and like, pulling up the front door of the shop and opening up. And like, you have to do that every day. So you have to really like it.
Yeah.
And I love the subject and there's so many ways into it. So those things are, there are many rewards. And I, like I said, I get to meet so many interesting people. We have an idea for a show. We call someone up, ask them if they'll come on. Yeah. And the worst thing they'll say is, no, sorry, I'm busy. but we had Nick Offerman on, who was the, he was on Parks and Recreation. He wrote an article about biking to work when he was starting out, biking from Manhattan to Brooklyn, and the abuse that he would be subject to by drivers. And we noticed that he followed us on Twitter. So I reached out to him and said, hey, we loved your article. Would you like to talk about it? And he said, yes. and he wouldn't have done that if I was just like Doug Gordon, random guy sitting on the internet. He did that because we have this podcast
platform
that we've built up. So I love that.
So is it worth it like to spend so many hours on doing podcasts?
You know, I've spent, I worked in television and media production, like I said.
Yeah.
And I've loved a lot of the jobs that I've had and the people that I've worked with.
Yeah.
But I've almost always been writing something and producing something for someone else.
Okay.
Their idea.
Yeah. Yeah.
An existing show or a show that is locked into a format that you can't deviate from.
No.
And what I love about podcasting, even when it is a ton of work, is that I'm only doing the things that I'm really interested in.
Your,
you know, Sarah will produce her own episode on a subject that she's interested in. Yeah. Aaron will do the same. I will pick a subject and just go for it. We will come together, the three of us, and one, you know, one thing to talk about that works really well for us too. But every time I sit down to edit or write or interview someone or just read a book to do the research, I'm like, oh, this is a thing I've chosen to learn about. And that's, I like, what's the point of life if not like expanding your mindset and learning as much as you possibly can before it's over? And I have learned so much just from doing this. I love every minute of it.
That's a great.
Yeah.
And is it, what is the best? Is it like to do it solo, alone, or to do it with other people? Because some people might say, no, I don't want to share the fame, or I don't want to share, I have my ideas, I don't want, like, it's going to be difficult. So what do you think is best?
I mean, it takes a lot of work, so you do need help. You know, we have a great editor, Ali Lemer, who does most of our episodes, and it's great to toss things off to her and know that, like, it's in great technical hands.
Yeah.
So I think even if you're trying to do something solo, you probably need a lot of production support. You know, we're getting bigger, and so we need research support and production support, and we have a good recording engineer where we go into a professional studio. So there's lots of stuff that it's happening before we even sit down at the microphone, and then long after we get up from it.
Yeah.
So I think anybody who is starting out, like, you can get good equipment online on Amazon or whatever, and you can, like, it's available to all of us.
Yeah.
But I think we've all heard those podcasts that, like, so this person just wants to talk for a little bit, and I'm not sure they have a lot to say.
Okay.
I don't want to put anyone down, but there's just so many podcasts out there.
Of course,
And we all know the difference between, like, the great stuff we love listening to and the stuff we listen to for 5 or 10 minutes, and we're like, okay, I get it. I hope that we are not that for people, but if we are, that's fine too. It's a big world out there. I think this is not a thing you can totally do by yourself, although some people, they do.
Yeah. But do you find it easy, like, to do it with two other people?
Yeah. I think I love working with Aaron and Sarah. They are great collaborators. Mm-hmm. They never say no. I think that's a really huge thing.
That's,
you know,
important, no?
They're good in terms of, like, hey, I'm having a problem with this. I'm not sure I'm phrasing this the right way. Or can you listen to this
okay.
and make sure I'm not offending anybody, right? Like, I want to make sure that I, as a middle-aged white dude. I'm not saying, you know, American perspective. I'm like not saying something that is going to get me in trouble or is going to make someone feel bad.
Yeah.
And so it's good to have two other people to bounce that off of. And I include in that calculation, like my wife, who I sometimes throw ideas at and say, like, am I saying this the right way? my friends and, you know, people who are outside of my immediate, people who don't look like me.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so it's good. I think if you're going to collaborate with other people, you need to learn to say yes a lot and get to, you know, I never look at someone and say that's a bad idea. You know, you look at them and say that's a great idea and I'm here to help you make it better. And I feel like Aaron and Sarah have done that for me.
Yeah.
And I hope I've done that for them.
That's great.
Yeah.
And now organizations starting their podcast and more individuals starting their podcast. In your opinion, which one is the, like I should say, most successful ones? The one like coming out from people, let's say from you, or it's the one coming out from an organization?
Do you mean like nonprofits or advocacy groups or like an architecture firm?
Architecture studio, yeah.
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 I don't know if there's much reason for private companies or consulting firms or architectural firms to start a podcast. They might have incredible people, knowledgeable people who have something interesting to say. Mm-hmm. And if so, by all means, great. Start a podcast. I think I approach this from the lens of an advocate, right?
Yeah.
And so Transportation Alternatives is the big advocacy organization in New York City. They're the ones fighting for bike lanes and pedestrian plazas. They are in coalition with transit groups trying to fight for bus lanes, things like that. It would not be worth their time to start a podcast. You know, what is worth their time is getting out in the street and collaborating with other people to get things done to improve the city. And so you have to just ask yourself, like, you know, why would we start a podcast? Like, what are we trying to do?
Yeah, like and I had the conversation with many colleagues
in
different countries. They say, okay, we want to market what our projects and at the same time we share knowledge.
Yeah.
So, but is it successful that the studio doing it, like corporate, having a podcast, or should be like a person?
I mean, I think you have to have a good person doing that podcast if you're a corporation, right? Like, you know, I'm trying, like, let's think of like a huge corporation like Disney or something like that, right? Or Coca-Cola. Like, would I really want to listen to the CEO of those companies just like in a regular podcast? Why? But, you know, if I'm a Disney fan or I'm a fan of the history of soft drinks and soda, maybe there's like some cool historian who has an interesting perspective, or there are guests you can bring on to talk about like how the company works. That might be worth it.
Yeah.
You know, but I think just having a podcast for the sake of like showcasing your work, I don't know.
Like interviewing different experts from the company or.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think if you're highlighting like and in that case, then you have to ask yourself, who is that for? Is it like we want to showcase within the company these great people who work for us, or we want to have a more public facing podcast that shows the world these great people who work for us?
Yeah.
Is there interest in that? You know, look, this all goes out the window because nobody, there's a great line from the screenwriter, William Goldman, who wrote The Princess Bride, among other classic Hollywood films. And he said about Hollywood, nobody knows anything. And they are all trying to replicate past successes. And that's why you get bombarded with like the 37th Marvel film or whatever. And original stuff that becomes a huge hit.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, even Barbie, like, right? It was like an unlikely phenomenon.
Yeah.
In the way that it was done. Nobody can really explain why. I mean, you can. Great talent, great director.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Like, great production team. But like there's a version of a Barbie movie that's terrible, right? That somebody produces and it's just like, it's not what this was. And so I say all this sounding somewhat pompous perhaps, but like, I don't know, maybe there is some company or firm out there that is going to produce like the Lightning in a Bottle podcast that like advances their brand and educates people and entertains people. Who knows? So like I said, never say no. Yeah,
exactly. What is your process in the making of a podcast? Like, if you share with us different steps.
It depends on the type of podcast episode or the subject. So sometimes we're responding to current events and it can literally be like, let's get into the studio this week and talk about this as soon as we possibly can.
Yeah.
And someone usually takes the lead on that and compiles all the research, you know, news articles, maybe calling an expert to get some background information.
Yeah.
Boom. And then we just get that out. So that's like the topical stuff that is not designed to be evergreen. It's just whatever's in the news that week.
Yeah.
If it's a longer lead kind of thing, like the Lego episode I mentioned, or Sarah had been wanting to do an episode on the Ray Bradbury story, The Pedestrian, which is a great episode where she took this book about like a kind of dystopian future and turned it into a much larger conversation about walking in cities.
Okay.
She, you know, spent weeks and months researching that, as I did with the Lego episode, interviewing different people.
Okay, then, this is like a pre the recording,
right? Yeah, this could take for...
It's like more the research phase.
Yep, so before we even get into the studio, there's weeks, if not months, of conversations.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, sometimes we have episodes that we record and then sit forever because you don't know what to do with the tape. That happens too. But we outline every episode, whether it's a chat episode or a longer form piece that is more researched.
Yeah.
For example, we did an episode on the 15-minute city controversy and why that has become such a lightning rod for conspiracy theories.
Yeah.
So that involved me watching countless YouTube videos.
To understand.
And compiling all these news articles from various protests that were happening largely in the UK. And then really sitting down. And once we had that outline, walking Aaron and Sarah through to lead a conversation on that. So it really depends on the subject, but a lot of work goes into stuff ahead of time. But then sometimes, you know, like a college kid doing their homework the night before the test. Sometimes we like need to get an episode out and we have a few things simmering, but nothing ready.
Yeah.
And we do throw like a current eventsy kind of episode together. So it really depends.
Yeah. So, but like if we zoom out, it's more like research, a recording and publishing, like post editing. Your editor do the editing.
So, you know, we record to get a 30 to 40 minute episode. We record for about, this is if it's a conversational episode, about an hour and a half to 2 hours. And then that will go to our editor. She will usually put together just like a super long cut and maybe she'll make some choices of like, I kind of figured this could go. But then we usually chime in and say, you know, cut that whole section.
Take off this.
It was just like a total aside.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's an important point for people interested in getting into podcasting is that a podcast needs to sound like a natural conversation.
Instead of like a Q&A or something.
But it isn't a natural conversation. When if you and I were meeting over drinks and talking, our conversation would go in 100 different ways.
100%.
And we might never get back to what we were like originally talking to. And that's fine. We might just like joke and riff on something for a while, make fun of somebody or, you know, like a politician or whatever. And like, and it's like, okay, but when you're editing a podcast episode, you need to say like, did that part of the conversation add to anybody's understanding of what we're talking about?
Yeah.
So I think all creation, all creative creation, is usually the act of unwriting or undoing the thing you did.
Yeah.
You know, we're working on a book. I've worked on longer form stuff. And usually you get everything out and then you have to take everything away.
Yeah.
So that process can last for usually, it's usually like about, if it's like a conversational episode, like a week or two, and then we get the episode out. If it's a longer form thing, it can be, we work on multiple drafts of that before it goes out.
Yeah. But like in the end, it's, as you mentioned, it's a conversation, but at the same time, you need to deliver something to the listeners.
Yeah.
So you cannot just have a conversation. You need also to follow the line. So you deliver it.
Yeah,
message.
We're telling a story, even though we're having a conversation. And I do think podcasting, people underestimate the degree to which storytelling is an important aspect of podcasting. Mm-hmm. We really feel that every episode should have a very short beginning. So we're just setting out the... like a movie, right? It's like, we're going to just set up, here are the main characters. Here's what you need to know. Okay, go.
Okay.
A much longer middle section. And then, you know, when you blow up the Death Star at the end, you're out. Like the movie ends as quickly as you possibly can.
Yeah.
And so we feel the same way with podcasting. It's like, okay, we talked about this subject. What's the lesson here? What can our listeners take away? Sometimes we ask that question directly.
Yeah.
We want people to feel like they're following something that's going to pay off.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Because they are giving their time to you.
They're, and it's like I said, the most intimate thing.
Yeah.
You're literally in their head, and their time is their most valuable resource. They can't get it back. And we also have Patreon subscribers who are giving us money. And so we feel that we owe them a lot, because they're making what we're doing possible.
Yeah, exactly. They're giving time and money.
Yeah. And so we feel like, look, no, we got to put our best effort into this. Exactly. People are depending on us. Yeah.
What do you think are the mistakes that podcasters are doing? We forget all the technical things. Let's focus on the content.
Yeah. I think mistakes I think that we have made. Not planning far enough into the future. I think that's something we're always trying to deal with. Because sometimes you are responding to the latest thing that happened.
Yeah, you need to be up to date. Like.
So, but then we also have these ideas that take longer to come across. So not properly planning. Mm. I think that's a mistake. And like I said, I think like not being too precious. Like sometimes I'll look at a podcast and I'll just see how long it is.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this is five people and they're talking for an hour and a half. Sometimes I just judge. We don't have enough time. Sometimes I'm like, I just can't listen to that.
Yeah.
Unless it becomes highly recommended from someone. So like I said, like being too precious with your content and not saying, you know what? No, that should go. Mm. That should be cut, because the audience is just we're going to lose the audience there.
Okay. Yeah.
I think having a separate set of ears, someone who can listen to it, who, like I said, sort of earlier, our subject in particular can be somewhat complicated for people to understand, or they have a reflexive revulsion to the idea of fewer cars in the city. Like, no, not my car. And I want us to talk to that person too.
Yeah.
So I think we need to, podcasters, you should remember you're talking to someone and you should try to imagine who that person is. I took a long time ago, I took a class on commercial acting, like how to act for commercials. And the advice the person gave, the coach gave, was, you know, you're selling soap or soda or, you know, some medication or whatever. Pick a person that you know and talk to them when you're looking at the camera. I think that's pretty good advice for podcasting. At least have an idea of who you're trying to convince or talk to. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
More things you hear in other podcasts and you say, no, this could be better.
I mean, I'd rather focus on the ones that I think are great. You know, like I mentioned, 99% Invisible.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of Michael Hobbs and a lot of the podcasts that he does, like Maintenance Phase and If Books Could Kill, because he does, like, they clearly do a lot of research into those episodes.
Yeah, yeah.
And you can almost tell that they're cutting out a lot of stuff that is irrelevant.
Yeah.
Yet still packing so much into one episode. I like people like Michael or others that just have a particular point of view. I mentioned Disney before. Like, I would not listen to a podcast by the Disney Corporation, but I listened to this podcast called The Disney Dish, which is these two guys, middle-aged guys, who are like super huge Disney fans, and they just talk about like Disney history and like what's happening in the news related to Disney.
Okay.
And I found it because I did the American thing of taking your children to Disney World and listen to these two guys. And I'm like, they love this subject.
Yeah. Right.
I will listen to take me anywhere. Yeah. So I think a passion for this subject and a deep knowledge.
Yeah. Yeah.
And also the thing I think we hope to do is like each of us has a specificity to our knowledge that the others don't have. We share a lot, but I can rely on them for other stuff.
So is it good that many people start podcasts?
I mean, look, I think a rising tide lifts all boats, and like there's no, like, what do I care if there's 10 podcasts or there's 10 million?
Yeah.
Like if people want to do something good and creative in this world and they think it adds to our world, let them do it. And that's like being creative. I have a writing background. I've done some comedy and things like that, but I've been an activist. But like life is about trying things and failing most of the time. And, you know, if we had tried this podcast and it had failed, that would have been a good lesson too.
You tried.
Yeah.
And also, what do you think about, or what is your message to the overthinkers? Because I also, again, to my colleagues, many of them has big ideas and they want to put it out, but they overthink it.
Yeah.
Like, oh, how will I write it? Which platform? My tone? Which words? And, you know, and then just time pass. And let's say now, 10 months after the first time we talked about
Oh God, I have input, this problem all the time. I'm an overthinker in many ways. I think probably my co-hosts would probably say that they are too in some ways. Not to, like, I think I know them well enough. We all think we are. I mean, look, you know, the question, like, you know, if that person asks, like, how should I do this? Should I write it? Should it be a video, et cetera? This is how I always approach activism, is to ask them, well, what are you good at? You know, if I recognize that person is an outstanding writer, then I would say, like, you should try writing something. You're so good at writing.
Yeah,
do it.
Yeah.
And if they're trying something they're not good at, like they've never done video before, great. That's also good, because maybe you have the resources to help them have it succeed.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think, you know, I think that's good. And I also think there's a part of overthinking. We have to be careful. I said that I like to have people look at or listen to the stuff that I'm working on so that I don't offend someone.
Okay.
But you also have to be careful that you don't overthink it and say, I can't say that because someone somewhere is going to get upset.
Yeah, because
someone somewhere is always going to get upset. Yes, that's the nature of like posting stuff online. So you have to be confident in your ideas and, you know, don't be a jerk. Don't say things that are, you know, racist or homophobic or whatever. Yeah. But I think, you know, push the envelope a little bit, say something worth listening to.
Yeah. And do you think people should be credible? Let's say that this person should be an architect in order to talk about architecture, or this person should be a planner in order to talk about planning.
I mean, it really depends. Like, you know, some of my favorite writers, A.O. Scott for the New York Times, the movie critic for the New York Times, I think he's actually moved over, you know, he never made a movie to my knowledge, but he's a great writer on film.
Okay.
And so some people just have a natural talent for making.
Mm-hmm.
Some people have a natural talent for interpreting and critiquing. And as long as they are thoughtful and informed, like, I don't know if they need expertise. It just depends.
Yeah.
I think you have to know what you don't know. Like, I never come into a subject thinking I'm like some arrogant dude who knows everything about this. I'm genuinely curious about how things work
and
want to talk to people who are smarter than me to understand it better. That's why I love podcasting, because it's like I'm much, you know, I'd rather be on your side of the microphone talking to someone than
listening
than mine
and learning.
Right now.
Yeah. How long will you continue to do podcasts?
Oh gosh, I don't know. I hope as long as there's interest.
Yeah.
We might get to a point where we say, you know, we've done and said everything we want to say. Mm-hmm. We're not sure that this can go on.
Okay.
I think so long as it doesn't end in like the Beatles breaking up and like one of us marrying someone that nobody else likes, or, you know, or like Fleetwood Mac situation. I'm really dating myself with the references, but like, as long as we're not like some personal grievance against each other that causes the band to break up. I think some things just play out, and if I wouldn't put a date or an expiration date on it.
Yeah.
But we'll see. We're working on a book. That's big news. That's coming out.
Cool.
You know, we'll see. We'll have to keep the podcast going through at least that.
How many years now?
How many years have we been doing the podcast?
Podcast, yeah.
We just celebrated our fifth anniversary.
Congratulations.
Like a few weeks ago as we're recording this.
Yeah, yeah. Tell me about first days of starting this podcast.
It was, we had great help from a producer named Curtis Fox, who had, and he was a friend of Aaron's when we sort of started, when we really launched what became The War on Cars. And, you know, we started, actually our first episode was literally like, why the world needs a war on cars. We kind of put the thesis statement in there in the first episode.
Yeah.
And I think it was as, like, looking back on it, it was as much a question to ourselves as it was us trying to convince the audience. Like, is this podcast worth doing?
Okay.
What are we trying to accomplish? Mm-hmm. And so that was a helpful exercise. Like, you know, episode one, why are we doing this podcast?
The intro.
Yeah. And we really didn't know what we were doing. But I think we actually did pretty well, all things considered. We last year for our anniversary episode, we went back, you know, because we are in the business of making predictions about like how cities will work in the future.
Yeah.
And we don't love to be too prescriptive.
Yeah.
But like, you know, how will e-bikes change cities? How, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, it was like, how will Uber and Lyft change cities? And I think all of us were like a little naive about they'd be much better for cities, but in turn they've actually been much worse.
Yeah.
It's been fun to look at that, but I think we did actually okay. We have made a lot of predictions about things that actually came true.
Which is the episode that you you really in love with, like you're proud, this is like of all the episodes you made?
Oh, I mean, I would sound terrible if I chose my own, so I'll choose one from each of my co-hosts. So I mentioned Sarah did an episode called The Pedestrian. She did an episode called The Driver,
yeah,
where she interviewed a woman who had killed a person on a bike. And this person, the driver, obviously was racked with guilt, and she walked in the episode through what happened on the night that this happened, and what she's done since to deal with it personally. And I love that episode because Sarah brought such a sensitivity to it. But I also thought it, for our subject, you know, this system of cars and driving that we have, we often talk about it as being bad for cyclists, bad for people who walk, bad for people who, you know, use a wheelchair to get across the street or whatever. We don't often talk about it as being bad for drivers.
Also.
Like, so that episode really brought that home. Like, you as a driver could kill another person.
Right.
And that is something we need to reckon with. So that was, I thought Sarah brought an amazing sensitivity and depth to that episode. And then Aaron did an interview. I mentioned Sarah Sayo, her book Policing the Open Road, which is all about basically, you know, in the United States, we have a huge problem that like the largest way in which most people interact with the police is when they are behind the wheel of a car. And that is used by the police in ways that tend to harass and sometimes grievously harm, if not kill, people of color. And so he interviewed Sarah Sayo, who's a historian, about kind of how this came to be, like how cars took over in the 1910s, 1920s, the courts and the legal system and the and policing didn't know what to do. And this led to a steady evolution that like eroded American civil liberties, basically, largely, especially for people of color. And again, I think Aaron brought like, you know, she was so great, Sarah Sayo, the author, but Aaron just, I don't know, was just put together in such a really nice way. So I think those are like, if you're looking for an entry point, and then if you're looking for something totally different, I will say like, I love my Lego episode. It was really fun. And it's, and it shows the broad array of subjects that we can cover.
What should podcasters stop doing?
I don't know what they should stop doing. That's a great question. Do you, are there things that you think like, oh God, I got to stop doing that. I need to, is there anything you, when you listen to yourself talk that you think, or an episode that you put together? Sorry to turn the tables. No, I'm stalling to give myself time to think.
It's very fine. I think, maybe like, pushing for questions that I'm interested in, how to say, of course I'm the host and I be play part of this, but sometimes like, let's say the person in front of me, this is like the field that they're working with. But for me, I'm interested just in this part. And I'm pushing the story to what I want instead of letting them put everything on the table. If you understand what I mean.
I mean, sometimes I go into episodes where I have my set list of questions and then the person starts to go away from it and I get scared of that. But I actually love it when that happens because first of all, tape's free, right? Like we can just keep recording forever. And the worst that'll happen is you'll cut it, right? And the person will understand that usually. But the best will happen is you'll find something new and surprising that you never expected.
That's true.
So I would not be afraid of that. I think for me, like you certainly notice the things that you say. I say like a lot, probably in this interview, as a lot of Americans do. So you hear your particular quirks that you have when you speak, and you either have to learn to live with them or recognize what needs to be improved. I do think sound quality is a huge issue for a lot of podcasts. So just like even a really great podcast where the person's brilliant, I'm like, if they sound like they were recorded in a cave, it's like I said, it's this intimate issue, intimate media. You're sticking headphones in your ears and the sound is traveling through these synapses in your brain to like actually exist in a part of your brain that aren't your ears. And so if the sound quality is bad, I will often turn off a podcast, and I've even apologized on one episode of like, we just had bad sound quality because it's like recording at home, right? You know, COVID kind of stuff. So we have, I think that's, you know, invest if you can, especially if you're a company or have the resources, in like a moderately good studio where you can record in quiet.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're in a pretty good soundproof space. You've got great equipment. Like, I think that makes a lot of difference. Yeah. Even a great subject done badly is,
And what is the most important skill or skills that podcasters should learn or develop?
Curiosity and listening. It sounds really obvious. I mean, I really enjoyed talking to you because I really feel like we just met. I was rushed from the thing that I was talking, and I don't know. You feel like an old friend already. Like, we should go get a drink afterwards. Listening, like, what is the person really saying, and responding. I mentioned, you know, like some acting classes I had taken. I had done improv.
Yeah.
It's like a fun thing to do when I was like a little younger. Yeah. And the biggest thing with that is never going into anything with a preconceived idea of what you want to do or say.
Mm.
It's listening to what the other person is doing and saying, and then responding to that. And recognizing that, I had a great teacher who said, like, if you go into everything with the expressed goal, not of being funny, but of making the other people you're working with look like geniuses, you will all look like geniuses. And I think that with Sarah and Aaron and the podcast, we have that rapport where we go into everything recognizing the other two people I'm working with are smarter than me. And I want to make sure that that is shown.
Yeah.
And they, I think, do that as well.
Yeah.
And so hopefully it comes across that, like, we all respect each other's opinions, even when we're challenging them.
Yeah.
And so I think that listening skill, you know, and look, there's a fine line between, you've got to outline and know where your subject goes know your story and know the story you want to tell, versus like being willing to listen.
Yeah.
Like I said, it's so intimate. People think they know you. There's that kind of parasocial relationship you can have with your favorite podcast host.
Yeah.
I certainly have some of those where I'm like, oh, I really want to meet this person. They'd be my best friend. So I think, you know, empathy also is a really big one.
Yeah.
You know, we especially are talking about a subject where, like, we're talking about, like, people dying in car crashes.
Yes.
People who have been made homeless by the expenses they have to lay out. You know, a really tough subject.
Yeah.
And so we like to have fun, and we have episodes where we do. But I think you have to have real empathy.
Yeah.
And we also have empathy for the people we're trying to convince, right? The
also,
drivers
also.
who are trapped into car dependency.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And here comes the last question before we go to the final section.
Okay.
I guess you heard it a lot. What is the next, or what's the future of the podcast?
Well, like I said, we have the book, so that will be a thing. I think we're probably going to do...
Is the book going to be a summary of, like, the episode, or what is it?
It's kind of a polemic. It won't really be a summary of the episodes.
Mm-hmm.
The idea being that, sort of like the podcast and my presentation earlier, is like, no, we actually have to take on cars. Cars ruin cities. Cars ruin lives. Cars ruin nature. Cars ruin the planet. We are going to sort of take that perspective and bring it to the subject of saying, like, okay, you know, you've seen lots of things that want us to tweak around the edges.
Yeah.
But like, no, we actually have to fundamentally reassess our relationship with cars. So that's what the book will be about. So
will you three write it?
We're collaborating. Okay. You know, exactly how that balance will work, we're still all working out. Oh, one of us will take one chapter and we'll contribute to it. We work well together, so I'm not worried about that.
Amazing.
So that's next. I think that will lead to hopefully a lot more live stuff. You know, we've done some live shows.
Like during event or?
I mean, either like during an event like this, you know, this festival, or our own live shows. You know,
what do you like about the live?
I love our audience. I mean, I really love, we think we have the most brilliant, most engaged audience in podcasting. I learn as much from the emails we get from them or talking to them in person as I do from sitting down in front of a microphone. And so when we do these live events, like I mentioned earlier, like, they all connect with each other.
Yeah.
We've done two live shows in New York, and one we had a guest and he was great.
Okay.
And we did bits and we did all these kind of like news items and stuff. But our second live show, we actually devoted half of the show to Q&A from the audience.
That's
and
that
was the best part of the show.
Yeah.
And so I think we'll do more of that kind of stuff.
Amazing.
Yeah.
So is there something planned or not yet?
We have a live show coming up in New York in January 2024.
Wow. Great.
So we'll put a link in the show notes, as they say. You know, when the book eventually comes out, we'll have some book-related tour. Hmm. We're speaking at the Winter Cycling Congress in Edmonton, in Canada, which should be awesome. Like so many passionate, cool people working to fix and improve that city and people coming from all over the world to talk about the thing that people always say, you can't bike in cold temperatures. Well, no, here's this whole thing that exists to tell you you can.
Yes.
So that'll be really fun. And, you know, I hope we can just bring more awareness to the subject. I think that's always the mission, and find creative ways we haven't done before to do that.
Yeah, like experimenting also.
Yeah, new subjects, things like that, new guests.
That's great.
Yeah.
Well, so in this episode, like, how to say, I focused a lot about the behind the scenes of your podcast.
Yeah, I gotta say, I'm not some expert in podcasting. I just like, we've done a good job of working on this one.
Yeah, exactly. Because for me, there are a lot of, I read in I think an article from Spotify, or they were interviewing Spotify. They say 80% of people starting podcasts, they stop after 6 episodes. And 20 continue. So when now you're telling me like you continue for 5 years, so it means something. And I love to bring your perspective, to learn from you. So I was listening to the behind the scenes, but the topic, I love the me and also the audience listen to your podcast to learn more. So we didn't like talk about a lot about like cars and why cars bad and so on. It's like, for me,
Your audience probably already knows like why we need to fix cities to make them less car dependent.
We will also learn more when we listen to.
I really appreciate
to your platform. So to summarize this episode, I love that you give 3 messages to our listeners, with focus on podcast and storytelling.
Yeah. 3 lessons. Well, 1 lesson is just be passionate about the subject. We've all read books on what could have been the most boring subject, but the person who wrote it loved that subject so much and spoke to people who cared about that subject as much as they did, if not more.
Yeah.
And you walk away from that book thinking, wow, this is fantastic. So I think you have to really care about what you're doing. So that's lesson number 1.
Yes.
I'm just pulling these out of nowhere, trying to sound smart. Like I've thought about this for a long time.
No, but they take your time.
I think for me, this is not going to apply to everybody. Have great collaborators. Mm-hmm. I really like working with Aaron and Sarah. They're very smart. They will say and do things where I'm like, I wish I could think like that.
I love how you see them. I mean, like, they're nice people. You love to collaborate with them.
Yeah, they're really brilliant people. And I get to work with them every day.
Yeah.
And not only do I get to work with them every day, but any subject that they want to do or I want to do, they were like, yeah, let's all do this somehow. Yeah, go run with
together,
it, or I'll help you or whatever.
Yeah.
So good collaborators, you know, like, and that, you know, if you're doing a solo podcast, make sure you have a great editor. We have a great editor. Allie really does a good job of making us sound, editing out all my likes and all that stuff. But more than that, like, she has good editorial judgment as well.
Yeah.
So good collaborators is really key.
Yeah.
And I think podcasting, like I said, I keep coming back to this idea that it's intimate, that you are in a person's head.
Yeah.
You are talking to them, even if you're having a conversation. Like, we are talking to each other, but we're also talking to everybody listening. You know, be like if we went out for drinks and like everybody in the bar was listening, which would be weird.
Yeah.
Respect your audience because there's somebody out there.
Yeah.
In fact, there are probably lots of people out there who are much smarter than you.
Of course.
There are people out there who don't know the first thing about the subject, but they're not dumb.
Yeah.
Like nobody can be expected to know everything about everything. So you need to talk to the person in your audience who knows everything about the subject and the person who knows nothing, and you need to treat them as equals.
Yeah.
And for me, that's how I've always approached my TV work, right? Like I've done some history documentaries, right? Like, so there's someone out there who's an expert on Abraham Lincoln who's watching the History Channel documentary on Abraham Lincoln to see if they got it right. And then there's the person who is like maybe a teenager or like new to the country or like has never like knows a little bit.
Yeah.
And they need to walk away feeling just as good as the expert.
Yeah. Yeah. So passion.
Yeah. Passion.
Collaboration. And
respect for your audience.
Respect for your audience.
Yeah.
Great. I'm really happy that we're having this conversation. I'm grateful that you give your time to the podcast.
I'm so grateful that we got to do this. This was fun.
Yeah. And we keep in touch.
Yes, absolutely.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.